This is my hobby now. I seek for out of print Warhammer miniatures.
You probably know this voice.
Guys, you might be wondering, what kind of jackass rolls out wearing a lion sweater and carrying a Doomhammer? The quick, easy answer to that is, this kind of jackass. I'm exactly that kind of jackass. Today, Alliance Horde! You can shout out if you want. Guys, today, we celebrate as one. Today, you will be honored as one. Because today, you find out what your new expansion is.
I want you to open your hearts and your minds to what comes next. You are about to get a glimpse into the future.
In September 2016, Chris Metzen, then head of story and franchise development at Blizzard Entertainment, announced he would be retiring from the company. This took gamers and longtime Blizzard fans by complete surprise, but as it turns out, it's not always easy to see the reasons why your creative heroes move on to new things. I'm Scott Johnson, and today I have a special interview with Chris Metzen. Here we are a few months after the fact, and I wanted to give him a chance to talk about it in his own words. If you came to this interview expecting a bunch of leaked Blizzard secrets, I'm sorry to tell you that you're not going to get that. But what you will get is some real insight into the processes that Chris and people like Chris use at Blizzard to get work done, the kind of work ethic it requires to be there, and what it means to spend 23 years straight and then retire. It's a very personal interview, and we get to see a side of Chris that you probably don't hear about a lot. I hope you guys enjoy it. I sure did. So here it is, my conversation with Chris Metzen.
When's the last time I saw you? It was BlizzCon.
BlizzCon last year, and then we talked on the phone just before the retirement.
That's right.
And then that's it. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, a lot of living.
Ladies and gents, I'm here with a good friend and someone you guys all know and have been looking forward to hearing from, I think, for the last couple of weeks. I would like to introduce here on the show today, Mr. Chris Metzen. Chris, what's going on?
Hey, what's happening?
Hey, man. Nice and relaxed. Look at you fathering the little baby and... taking some time out and, you know, retirement and all that. How's things been treating you since the last time you and I talked was just before the big announcement, and here you are a couple months later. I interrupted you trying to find Warhammer 40K out of print figures online, which is...
Oh, allegedly. Who would do that? Who would buy those online? Yeah, man, no, things are really good. It's been a really crazy year.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, and in other ways, it's weird how schizophrenic it is. In some ways, it's been the craziest year of my life, and in other ways, kind of the quietest.
Yeah.
So, just thoroughly enjoying this era, you know, this window of my life. I've never had, I imagine this is most people, you know, just an extended period of time just to chill, you know, and not just relax, but just be able to breathe and contemplate, you know, without chasing down your day-to-day rhythm and, you know, going to work, in and out of work, and juggling all the things that people juggle. It's been amazing to have taken a step back and decompress, you know. So it's been good. I think not working agrees with me greatly.
Well, you sound super relaxed. You sound like a guy who's, I don't know, got to reset a bit. And
yeah,
a lot of people talk about, oh yeah, Chris Metzen, 23 straight years at Blizzard, and not just that, but so much of the focus of the outside on Chris and who he is and what he says and his creations and the things he's had his hands in. That is an intense 23 straight 365 day periods of time. And I have to imagine after that much intensity and that much and you, so many things you've witnessed there in terms of growth and change and explosive growth in some ways, because you know sometimes you guys had a tendency to be so ahead of the curve and making things so much better than anybody else that things just would roll. And before you knew it, it was the hottest thing ever. And now you're left with, oh no, how do we manage proceed? This? Yeah. How do we maintain this? Exactly. And you, and to come off of that must just be like a weird, big, heavy, full chested sigh in a lot of ways.
It is. And I think it's in ways that I can't even really register or compute yet. What do I know? You know, I'm going to be 43 here in a couple weeks. And, you know, so what do I know about life? What have I learned? I don't know. Not all that much at the end of the day. I spent so many years running real hot and real fast and, you know, chasing this dream that I had. And also trying to be a good, you know, a good soldier, a good officer for this, you know, company I was with. Mm-hmm. You know, you take a step back from all of that, the rhythm of it, the identity of it, the reality of it all, the pace of it all. And I've been very thoughtful, you know, the past number of months. I actually, while I announced my retirement, I think it was the middle of September there, I hadn't been into work for a number of months before that and had, you know, just a few touch points in there. So I've had a lot of time to think about things and kind of collate. And while, you know, I don't know, I don't know much more than the other, you know, average bear. It has been a wonderful gift to be able to kind of relax and get out of the kind of cycle I had been in for so long. And just, feel human, you know, I don't know. I wrote the letter, you know, at the point that I retired and, you know, the two big things I wanted to communicate were, you know, that Blizzard all those years, you know, it absolutely been, you know, my family. And it was just my great joy, you know, to have been there all that time. And I'm so thankful for the opportunity. And then the other point being, you know, my family, you know, this group of people that's, you know, four other people now with the baby dropping in. You know, and just this sense of like, I really want more time with them. And, you know, so I pull back and I'm just entirely thankful. And, you know, I know it's a miracle. Not a lot of people get to, you know, step back out of their rhythm and, you know, get to make a choice about, you know, how they want life to go. You know, like often, you know, we have to work, we have to, you know, grind it out oftentimes, you know, and doing things we don't always, you know, necessarily want to be doing. It's very rare that people get to do what they love, you know, as a vocation. And so I'm just very thankful. I guess I'm kind of meandering a little bit, but, it's made me this whole transition has made me very thoughtful, about life and what's important. Just given me a much deeper appreciation, not only for Blizzard and the miracle of it, but just for the far simpler things, you know, just being home with my kids and my wife, and I'm a happy dude.
Do you find so a transition like that can cause? Let me put it this way: to find that center, to find that new place where you've got that time with your family, you've got that time with Kat and the kids, and you can spend time pursuing things that maybe had to take a back seat a little bit during some of those crazier years. Do you think after now gone through that, do you think sometimes it, when people are looking for that level of change, that they have to go through a bit of a gauntlet there? Like that it has to be really hard. It has to be anxiety inducing. Like all those things matter to the end result.
Interesting that you use that word, anxiety. Screw it. I'll talk a little bit about what my experience has been over the past year. I may ramble a bit as I get through it, but ultimately it wasn't just leaving Blizzard was an incredibly difficult thing. You know, I'd been there since essentially I was a kid. You know, I think I was like 19 when I got hired. And it was my whole life. You know, it was my identity. And it was in many ways all consuming. And it allowed me, you know, to kind of realize all the dreams I had and aspirations I had, you know, when I was a kid. And it was just incredible. But there, you know, can be a cost sometimes to running that hard. And I guess the truth of my experience was, I think, I can't tell time anymore. Maybe it's 3 years ago. we've reported, not the details, but the, you know, the broad reality of kind of what had happened with, you know, the Titan project, mm-hmm. that we were engaged in.
Sure.
And we haven't shared a lot of details about it, and how things went left. And I'm not going to either, other than to say, you know, Titan going south, was the result of a number of years, that we had spent on it. And without giving too many details away, those were very frustrating years for me, not just because of Titan itself, but it was a contributor. And I think for a lot of us, you know, on the dev team, and, you know, we had reported before, we just, you know, we couldn't pull it together. We couldn't, you know, agree or move forward in bold fashion. And I think, during those years, I burned out really hard. And this is like over 3 years ago. And I think in my heart, I needed a change in my life. I wanted to slow down. I wanted to, just not carry the weight of it all. The expectation of it all anymore. But you know, when you've been at a company like Blizzard as long as I have, you know, it's almost, I think about Shawshank Redemption, and, you know, I'm an institutional man now. You know, I'm a Blizzard guy, you know, like through and through.
Sure.
I love that place. I love the people. And how terrifying a thought that, like, I think I don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was wrestling with, well, what are you talking about, kid? This is the perfect, you love the work. Mm-hmm. You love the people. You love this identity. You love the people that you get to tap into, you know, that, you know, meeting other gamers at BlizzCons and things like that. It was just such a joy and an honor.
What a dichotomy that must be to have those two different,
differing,
sort of emotional,
yeah,
things.
Like, it made,
yeah,
me feel that's schizophrenic, crazy. You know, because, sure, then there's this horrible thought under the surface of it all, which is, I kind of need it to stop. I've got nothing left. And I'm losing, you know, I'm losing myself in it. And what came with that was, you know, just a tremendous amount of stress and fear, certainly fear. You know, you're worried about failure. You're worried about letting all these people down. Whatever the next game is, whatever the next project is, what if it isn't, you know, perfect? What if people just hate it? What if I, through course of action, I dishonor the company, or I dishonor myself through not performing well enough, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Looking back now, I see that I had kind of fallen into a trap, which is kind of this cycle of performance. And just below the surface of that is, at some level, I think since I was a younger man, I just had this desperate need for validation, you know, which I think a lot of people feel. But maybe I had it acutely, you know, as an artist, you know, you're just so desperate for people to, ultimately, I think it's just to be seen, mm-hmm. and in that way, understood and validated in a way. I think that's any artist, really.
Well, your art is often a representation of, you know, in a lot of cases, almost your very soul. And when you put that out there, there's a real vulnerability to that.
Oh,
I totally
God.
Get
you know,
that.
And, I, yeah. and I'm the kind of person that wears his heart on his sleeve. And, you know, it was just such a strange trip all those years. And ultimately to have clarity on that kind of loop of, you know, kind of needing for validation, performance, validation. And now you have expectation. Mm-hmm. To perform again, performance validation, expectation, performance validation. It's kind of vicious loop that I didn't realize I had been in for a very, very long time. And in a way, inside me, it's like, it doesn't matter if your game's a hit. It doesn't matter if people love this or love this. You're never safe. You have to outdo it the next time. And it's mm-hmm. kind of like this train you can't get off. And you know, I think that can happen to people. I think it happens for, I hate this term, but, you know, high you know, performer type people, especially in entertainment, you just start to just kind of grind it out. It doesn't mean you don't have passion in your work, but there's kind of always this underlying fear that drives you to move faster and bolder and, you know, trying to exert more and more control over your work, you know, which is also its own, you know, can be its own trap or the illusion of control. Mm-hmm. So I got real wound up and I didn't see the amount of tension it was putting on my system, on my body, you know, on my mind. Cause when you live with a certain rhythm for so long, it's just, it's all, you know, mm-hmm. you can't see outside of it. And so what had happened about 3 years ago as Titan got shut off is I was just at my, you know, I was at a very low place and just very frustrated and uncertain that I wanted to keep doing it. But desperately in love, you know, it's almost like a relationship. You're like, ah, you know, this person's, you know, my whole world. You know, how do you walk away from something that gives you security in that way, even if it ain't all that good.
Right.
But you know, something everybody has to deal with at some point or another. And what happened at the time was, you know, that the company really internally kind of took a hit. You know, your morale was kind of low. We didn't know what was going to happen. What you know, is there a cost to be paid that this giant game, you know, isn't going to happen? And it was around that time that, you know, Jeff Kaplan our kind of leadership group, you know, really had to have that a very sober discussion about, like, well, guys, what's next? What do we do next? And we knew that it was so important for us to pick ourselves back up and pull together in a way that we could not have pulled together before and make good on the company's faith in us. You know, so we conjured the Overwatch idea. And at that time, I didn't know how much I had left in the tank to be, you know, a creative director, a creative leader, you know, summon the hooks, get everybody fired up, keep them held together and, you know, hold the torch up, you know? And then I guess in my mind, I had romanticized it as, you know, one last charge at the wall. Let's do this thing. And what motivated me was, you know, love for my friends and love for Blizzard, you know, like I'm going to give this one last thing and then we'll see, then we'll reassess, you know, hopefully it works and we can put a awesome video game out. And then I'll reassess, but I felt overwhelmingly like, my friends needed me, and Blizzard needed me. And that's a very powerful, emotion to me. You know, I want to do right, you know, by my people.
Sure.
And,
by extension, I suppose that means everyone else out there. Like what you guys did with, however those pieces were picked up, however they were assembled and however Overwatch found its place, there's a personalness to it. There's a, speaking just as a player and an avid, you know, lover of the world that was created with Overwatch, there is an attention to detail and to care about these characters that I don't think anybody outside expected from a shooter. My guess is that stuff has deeper roots and goes much further places than we'll ever know about.
Totally. There's a lot of love in it.
You can feel it.
Of our love for each other and our want to do well for each other. You know, Titan was so heartbreaking in many ways. Like we, you know, the only way forward was to lift each other up and pull together in a way, you know, and be vulnerable with each other. And in so many ways, that's what shot Titan down is maybe too many people protecting their own visions and their own instincts for what it should be when there was so much expectation on it. And I think it was a group of people that just stopped communicating and stopped developing and chasing ideas for the sheer joy of doing it together, which had served us so well on everything else we'd ever built. Yeah. I think it got we fractured. And so the whole point of Overwatch in terms of being leaders of a development team was to break that with a hammer and do it a new way and kind of go old school and do it for each other. And that was as true the day we decided to do it as it was the day it went out to the public. And I look back now and just Overwatch was such a gift to get to, you know, one last great charge at the wall. Right. Mm-hmm. And to get to be part of that with that crew was just such an amazing gift and a blessing. And it showed me a lot about that team, And the other teams at Blizzard, in terms of reminding us again of where we are strongest. And it just gave me so much joy to be able to build it. Now, the fact that it went out and did well and people responded to it or whatever is just the icing on the cake. Mm. But what I will remember when I'm 80, if I make it that long, is the joy of getting to build it with that team and what that felt like to pull each other up again. And that's the thematic of Overwatch, right? Like a group that was shattered is slowly pulling itself back together, little older, little wiser. That's always kind of been the underlying theme.
You seem to do that a little bit across the board through the history of the projects at Blizzard. It always feels like there's a little bit of Metzen and his life in these games. And I realize we're talking about very complicated themes, many, many characters. They're all going different places, doing different things. Jane has got some ideas. Thrall's got some ideas. Everybody's got ideas. But there always seems to be just a little bit of Metzen blood and all that stuff. Do you believe that? Like, is that something? Because we all say it, but does Chris Metzen believe that?
Oh yeah, it's undeniable. You know, it's there's a lot of me in those stories across all those worlds. And you know, yeah, I knew it at the time. Like sometimes I chase an idea, and only months or years later, I look back and go, "Oh God, that's holy cow! That's what I was processing at the time." And and in that way, the art is this cathartic experience that in some way helps me gain perspective on my life through these, you know, fictional contrivances, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I even noticed
other times I'm much clearer on where a hook is coming from. You know, I'm going through something at the time and, so sometimes it's very clear and deliberate and sometimes it's not. And it surprises me later. But in both scenarios, my hope over time is that I was still respectful of the worlds in such a way that it certainly wasn't all about me, and not too much me, such that, you know, the other developers and storytellers felt disenfranchised, or that it's just too much Chris going on, guys. This is ridiculous, you know. that hopefully reasonable people would pull me back. But yeah, there's a lot of me, I think, in those stories over time. And I think that just goes back to my wiring and how, you know, I'm a super sensitive person, which doesn't mean if you call me names, I'll break down. I'm just, you know, it's like my system is super sensitive.
Sure. You're catching, you know, nuances. You're hearing things others aren't hearing.
Yeah.
You're seeing
it's
something
really
in
weird
a face.
Emotionally
sure.
and just, sure. just physically, you know, to sensation and things. I got a really weird peaked system. You know, so while we were working on Overwatch all that time, while it was a blessing and a joy, I didn't really understand just how burned out I was, I think, in general, and more to the point, how empty my tanks had become.
Yeah.
And I'm super proud of the creative work I did in Overwatch. There was clearly still some fuel left in the tank. And I love the work I got to do with those guys, in particular, the shorts. I just had longed for years to be able to do, you know, cinematic content that was, you know, freestanding, you know, solo stories. You know, so that's, oh God, was just the funnest set of ideas to get to chase. But, you know, over the arc of time, you know, I started developing, I started having panic attacks left and right, and just nonstop anxiety. You know, I think over the past, again, I can't tell time, but let's say two years before I finally, retired, I think I had been having panic attacks all the time, but I didn't know what they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would chalk things up to, I'm having allergic reaction. You know, Pat and I would go on dates to go to a movie, and like almost all the time I would start panicking in the middle of a movie. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what was going on. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm allergic to popcorn all of a sudden, or maybe I'm, and it's the stupidest things that would trigger, you know, so I'd run to the, urgent care and, you know, get a breathing treatment. Yeah, my lungs are stopping, you know, and they're like, dude, there's nothing wrong with you, man. You know? And I'm like, God, it keeps happening. Man. So in a lot of really weird ways, I never would have thought it was panic.
Sure. Sure.
But,
I gotta tell you real quick. I'm having a really big deja vu here because this is absolutely something I've had to deal with, perhaps for different reasons or whatever, also stuff that came in my late 30s, also started around then, also created the sense of like doom for no reason.
It's really bad.
Irrational. Yeah.
It's and you wonder, dude, you know, is it, you know, obviously sometimes there's very obvious things that can, you know, that a person's worried about that can set you off. But I think I had many of those, but many fears, I guess, that I didn't realize were there under the surface that I had been carrying a long time, you know, fear of failure, fear of, some people call it these days, imposter syndrome, you know, that, I'm really not as good at my proficiencies as people think. And I know I'm just going to fail. I'm going to let them all down and I'm going to fail the team. And how will I live with myself? You know, I just would go through this stuff over and over. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think I had a lot of fears that I wasn't looking at. And I think it's hard for everybody to look at their fears. Maybe sometimes it's particularly hard for men, and maybe men our age, because you're supposed to just handle it. You're supposed to be invulnerable and immortal and, you know, be able to handle all sorts of stress and things. And, you know, I wasn't trained to be able to look at fear, you know, like, you know, as we not, you know, growing up, it's like, you know, you gotta
rub some dirt in it.
You gotta brush yourself off and get back into the mix. Right. Sure. That's my wiring is just to bring it.
Right.
But I think I had been doing that for so long. That's why my tanks had run dry. And, around the beginning of 2016, we had all these things in play. The movie's coming out, you know, Overwatch is coming out. You know, will, you know, our animated shorts work? You know, cause we were, you know, new technologies and, you know, that department, we weren't sure how they would wind up. And you know, all these things were hedging, you know, will Legion work, you know, will people come back, you know, and mm-hmm. play WoW and mm-hmm. just, and we had, and by the way, totally, on another front, you know, we Kat and I had a baby coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to be 43, you know, on the back of my head, I'm overjoyed that this kid's on the way, but in the back of my head, I'm like, I wouldn't have admitted this to myself at the time. I'm so burned out. Like, oh God, how will I do well for this kid?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Do I have it in me to just be ever present and do a good job in raising this little girl? And
it's a primordial fear, man. It's just like,
yeah,
this
dude,
deep,
you know,
thing.
And just the sheer change of when a child comes into the home, you know, it's, you know, will my kids be okay, you know, with the transition and, mm-hmm. You know, how will Kat and I do? It's all the normal fears that people have when a Rugrat's on the way. And in the mix of it all, you know, my body just started to go nutso. You know, it started to have, you know, this anxiety and this panic, and it started to become. And I finally realized what it was. You know, I went to, you know, finally, you know, went to see a professional, and the doctor's like, "Yeah, dude, you're messed up." And as I began to walk it through in my head, you know, and it was supremely difficult. The horrible thought was, I think I just need to stop. Mm. I think as much as I love everything we're working on at the job and all these amazing, it's like these arrows that we had fired years before, we're finally about to hit the bullseye of the movie, you know, and, mm-hmm. You know, Legion, Overwatch, all these things were just about to be done and come out. The terrible thought was, I need to stop. Can I?
Mm.
Is it ethical to do so? My friends need me, right? You know, it's almost like this weird, forgive me for saying it, but almost like this weird messiah complex, you know, mm-hmm. not that I think all that much of myself, but I think part of my, you know, sickness was like, oh, they need me. Mm-hmm. I got to get in. It was really way more about me and feeling, you know, again, that sense of performance and that sense of, self-worth, you know, that I'm this leader, you know, and I help hold it all together. And
did we hurt or help you as audience when we would see you on stage at BlizzCon or in a cool jacket at a panel?
Oh God, I wouldn't put it like hurt or help. It was definitely part of it. Yeah. You know, I think I told this to you before. I've always been, how would I put it, man? There is a part of me that I'm actually a very very different guy than that guy. Mm-hmm. Although that guy is not being fake to you, I'm actually kind of introverted, and homey. You know, I like to be home. I like to be in the familiar. I like to be comfortable. I don't go out a lot. I don't have a whole lot of friends outside of Blizzard after all these years, but I'm doing much better about that these days, actually reaching out to people. I have more energy to do so. Mm-hmm. But I'm a homebody. I'm one of the most boring cats you've ever met. I just love being home with my family and nerding out and hanging out. And so once a year, there's this convention, right, where everyone's just geeked out of their minds. And, for BlizzCon and events like that, I can turn it on. You know, there is also a part of me that can come out, you know, of the box and really truly enjoys interacting with people and just talking and relating and telling stories and you know, like up on the stage at BlizzCon, like story time, right? Like, you know, whether it was Pandaria or Legion or whatever. Oh God, there's a part of me that just loves getting up there and playing Pied Piper, you know, and setting the stage for what the audience is about to see and geeking out over lore. That's absolutely a part of me too, but that's not the core of me. Mm-hmm. And so when you go to things like BlizzCon and people are, you know, people will stand in line and get your autograph and they just want to shake your hand and say, hey, and just, you know, through me in a way, they're connecting to just Blizzard in general. You know, I was one of the faces, mm-hmm. you know, that was recognizable. And so there's a part of that that's humbling and overwhelming and such a blessing, and to receive that kind of love from people is so amazing. And those are some of my fondest memories of BlizzCon. That's really what it's about. It isn't about the games, you know, we were schlocking necessarily at any given year. It was about all those people that would come and jamming with them and making them feel like they're in our living room for a weekend. And, you know, we're all in it together. And
sure.
But I think, you know, when Monday morning comes around, and I've had this weekend, right, where, you know, every minute of that weekend I'm treated like, you know, this rock star, you know, it always behooved me on Monday to remember, like, hey, dude, you know, you're not, you know, you're this quiet dude from La Habra that got lucky to get this job in the first place. Remember, you're those kids. You know, when I go to Comic-Con and Stan Lee walks by, I freak out, you know, or Joss Whedon, or, you know, it was always on me to remember. I'm not remotely as cool as that might look, or as nerdy as I look. Mm. And I think that kept me pretty grounded. It's also, you know, Blizzard, you know, the Blizzard culture, and I've helped shape this over time, it doesn't brook that kind of shit either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get too big for your britches, you're no use to anybody, is my thinking. And so I always tried to be very responsible with that kind of bifurcation of my, you know, of my gears, I guess. Because at work, I'm a little more that guy. I'm very outgoing. I'm super social. And that's how I'm able to push ideas and rally consensus and get people moving. Cause I can sell, you know, I'm like a third generation salesman. Mm-hmm. And you know, so there is a part of that, you know, is really a part of me, but I also think that that's the part of me that maybe burned out a little bit. So interestingly enough, you know, with this BlizzCon came around, you know, I had promised my kids, I'm like, yeah, guys, you know, we'll go for a couple hours and I'll take them to go see Weird Al. You know, they get a big kick out of Weird Al.
Sure.
I'm like, how rad, you know, go to a concert with these Rugrats and maybe I'll wear a mask. Maybe I'll, you know, just go incognito. And Blizzard was cool enough to front me some passes. And, mm-hmm. You know, we were going to go do that because my kids now, 13 and 8, are just total Blizzard gamers.
They're in it to win it now, for sure.
I mean, they are merciless killers in Overwatch. I can't even believe how badass they are.
Yeah.
And you know, we group up, you know, we play WoW, you know, together, and it's just awesome. And so this BlizzCon was kind of the first BlizzCon where they're like less going as my kids and getting a kick out of what dad does. And this was like, dad, like, we don't, you know, this is our show. Right. I want to go see what's going on with WoW. I want to go see, you know, Sombra. Mm-hmm. They might have had some inside information. you know, so, you know, it was their BlizzCon this year, and I thought I was all good. And then the week it came up, it was about a week before, and I started wigging out again. You know, the panic came back, mm-hmm. and I'm waking up, you know, in a cold sweat at night, and I just go, holy shit, I thought I was, you know, getting over this. And I guess I wasn't ready, you know, so I had to tell them, I felt so guilty. I had to tell them, like, guys, I can't go. Yeah, I can't take it. So, you know, so luckily their uncle took them to see Weird Al, but it was just the weirdest turn, you know, just because if you know what panic and anxiety is, like, panic is kind of, you know, it's like the fear of fear. Mm-hmm. And I got into a mode, you know, I'm doing much better, you know, but towards the front of the year, it's like, you know, when things would trigger me, or, you know, I hate that word, things would come up and it's like, my brain would just start spiraling on the 2,000 things that could possibly go wrong in ways that how would I get out of this situation? How can I handle this?
You're catastrophizing like I do sometimes.
Catastrophizing. Yeah. Absolutely. Just this Death Star on the horizon that never goes away. And you know, it's hard to de-escalate, or it's hard to stop that chain reaction once it begins, when this becomes part of your, you know, chemical makeup. And of course, associated with the fear and the cuckoo thinking, you know, my body starts wigging out, you know, my breathing goes weird. Oh, great, my lungs are going to stop. Or, oh, great, this, oh, here it is, you know, here's the stroke.
Yep. And, why is my left arm going numb? Why is my knee hurt?
Here's my arm going numb. Right on cue. And trying to convince your body that no, you're not going to die. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds stupid to say out loud in the light of day, but like I tell you, you know, I thought I was near death a number of times. You know, it turns out I wasn't. But convincing my body of that is a whole nother thing. Cause now, you know, something could happen, you know, anything can happen. And it's like my body, you know, my brain is fine. You know, I'm not worried about anything, but, you know, something could happen and my heart rate goes up and my body assumes it just goes into this fight or flight mode. So it's like, you know, it's going to take me a while to kind of rebuild my system. And
there are people hearing this, by the way, that are really going to benefit from this. Not just because, you know, they're dealing with it too. And oh, it's nice to hear this, but what they're hearing here is somebody who, the perception is, because perception and reality are always so different, and you know, you never know what somebody's really going through or what they're not going through, and we make a lot of assumptions about people, especially in a public place. And to a lot of people who may hear this interview, they come from a place where they recognize Chris Metzen by name and by face and by his work and that sort of thing. And I know, because I've heard from many of them, that there are a lot of people who deal with this who are afraid to even talk about it, to bring it up, or to even, you know, see a doctor about it or anything, and they're hearing one of their heroes confront it. That's matters, dude. That's a big deal, I think.
Well, hopefully, you know, it's before this started to happen in me, you know, I had people close to me that had, you know, anxiety disorder, you know, regular mm-hmm. occurring panic attacks, and people very close to me. And, you know, I always tried to help them through or whatever, but at some level I just didn't understand. How could I, you know, really understand, the terror, and almost the hopelessness of like, oh my God, is this what my life is now? Mm-hmm. Will this ever change?
Yeah.
Will I live out all my years, you know, in having to wrestle, you know, this fear or my body going hard left on me, you know,
right.
I couldn't possibly have understood it. And now I think I have such a different sensitivity, you know, and I had to go out on another front too. I had to, you know, I'm taking a little bit of medication, you know, like Zoloft or whatever the hell it is. It's a pretty low amount. Mm-hmm. But you could not have, I think I had developed such a gnarly fear of medication, right?
Oh my gosh, this is so well, like,
medication? Are you kidding? I can't go on medication. that'll strip me of my superpowers, and I won't be able to be creative or focused or anything. You know, because I've just heard horror stories about people, you know, trying different types of medication and it whacking your brain out. And my system's so sensitive. I'm like, I don't know what dope's gonna do to me, you know.
Right.
And dope meaning
right. No, I just totally understand. I've been in this very conversation, by the way.
Right.
So this is all ringing a real bell for me.
And so it was crazy. And so on the other side of it all, and I'm doing way better. I'm happy as a clam. Mm-hmm. But you know, I just think I have such a different sensitivity and appreciation for what people go through. And because we're all, and it's funny, you know, let's say you go out and you buy a red car, mm-hmm. and then suddenly you're so aware of all the red cars on the highway that you never really processed before.
Yeah.
In a way, the more I talk to people and allow myself to just be honest about what my experience has been and not try and be over, paint a very macho picture that I got it all together and, mm-hmm. you know, I don't. Mm-hmm. But the more I let myself just communicate with people, the more I hear it's not all that uncommon. And I had no idea
that
so many people deal with stuff just like what I'm dealing with.
And we all get real good at putting up the wall and letting and making it look like it's not there. Yeah, for sure.
And that's too why I've always been so sensitive about the public face of, I don't know, that Blizzard guy, right? The guy on stage, and being so aware of like, I want you to know I was not ungenuine in those moments. That's me too, for mm-hmm. sure.
Sure.
But just that perspective of the version of ourselves we put out, it's so important to have integrity, you know, between, you know, the kind of most private parts of yourself and your public facing. You know, I had always hoped that people who observed me, like at a BlizzCon, for instance, and knew me personally, could see that, like, no, that's him too. Mm-hmm. That is truly that guy, you know?
Well, you had told me,
you can't get him to shut up. You, that's that guy too, you know?
You had told me something, I think it was 2014, maybe it was 2013. At BlizzCon, you had made a comment to me that I never forgot. And forgive me if this is something you don't even remember saying, but it stuck with me. You had leaned over and whispered to me as much as you can whisper in the Hilton. It's so loud in there. But you had leaned over and you'd said, "You see all this?" He said, "None of this is real." And I thought, oh, that's interesting. What does he mean? Does he mean just the artifice of it all? Parties are just big social fake outs where everyone's trying to impress everybody else. Like I was trying to find meaning in it.
Right.
And I think what I eventually came away with was this kind of concept you're talking about, the integrity of the private and the public. You know, somebody
it
once
blurs.
Told, yeah, it does blur it, and it tends
it
to.
It blurs. Because the trick is, in I'll just say it, after all these years, especially the Hilton lobby.
Yeah.
How do I say it? It's full of many different types of people.
Mm-hmm.
From the core of the core, you know, that like the, you know, gamers that are truly just there for their friends and the game and the, you know, and the sheer love of it all. And then all the way up to people who heard that the event's going on and it's a very exciting place to be and are there, you know, either just to party or just to, you know, hangers on, man. I don't know, you know, just
totally get it. Yeah.
Another group of people. And as that weekend goes on, you know, and certainly as the booze starts flowing, you know, that line can blur. You know, it's just people, you know, it's just people. And so I think in that moment where I was talking to you, you know, I think in that moment I had just talked to a few folks who clearly were not just fans, you know, right. you know, who struck me as almost more like, "Hey buddy," Wall Street types who happened to be there because that was the cool spot to be, you
sure,
know.
Sure.
You know, but the thing that is always consistently real is when you meet, you know, the real players, you know, and you know, and just there's this spark of love, you
sure,
know, and
sure, there's something special about it. I mean, actually,
a real connection.
Knowing what you were going through in say mid 2015 or so, and knowing that you still came out and hung out with us at Nerdtacular last year, or I guess in 2015. Boy, I really appreciate that now.
Given- oh, it was super fun, Scott. What you don't know is that I actually played hooky a couple times that one. I think it was a Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, and there weren't a lot of people there, so it was very comfortable. Mm-hmm. But there was a couple times where you know it's starting to build, and so I went back to my room a couple times and mm-hmm. just kind of chilled out for 40 minutes,
mm-hmm.
And got it together, and then came back down. You know, I actually needed to take a couple breaks, sure. and that really wasn't all that many people, if that gives you an indication. And even at that time, I didn't realize what was going on with me. You know, I didn't know that I was having, I didn't know that it was called anxiety or panic attacks or whatever.
Yeah.
at that time.
You were sort of in the midst of it all. And
yeah, you know, I was convinced that everything's
and
fine.
And you're right. There's only like 700 people come to Nerdtacular because that's all we can handle in the ballroom. Yeah. And so it's this nice, concise group. But I always wondered, what must it be like when it's 30,000 and they're everywhere, always?
It could be a little scary, even. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's times that last one, the Overwatch one, it's like the fear in me, some of it's like fear of public, it had been growing, you know, fear of public spaces, fear of being in front of people, fear of, I even, you know, in my weirdest moments, I was worried about like, how good is security?
Mm-hmm.
I'm standing up there. What if
you're exposed up there, right?
Well, I mean, you know, and this is totally irrational, right? But what if someone's really angry that we nerfed their shaman and, you know, and as crazy as that sounds, like that's the kind of stuff that would occur to me. You know,
it's always just, shaman though. It's always them. It's always the shaman.
It's always the shaman, you know, but,
you know, but no, I totally understand. This
if I get
is part
shot,
of it.
It would just be a stupid place to get shot, you know, or a perfect place to get shot, you know?
Sure.
And I would just think about, it's like, that's not me. It was just this weird fear thing that started coming up. So
does it sometimes feel to you, I mean, not to belabor it, but does it sometimes feel to you like it's a different dude making all these claims in your head? Like that's how it feels to me. Like there's someone barking out irrational things and I have no choice but to go, what are you talking about? Like it's like there's two consciousnesses and one of them is smart and chill and understands how irrational the other guy's being, but it doesn't matter. That guy's loud and you can't shut him up.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. It makes you feel like, you know, a cuckoo bird. You know, a very wise person who was very close to me once said, you are not the voices in your head. Mm. Yeah. We all have kooky voices in our head and this, you know, this and that and the other, and, you know, things that flash and things that we think about a lot, you know, and ultimately they're just, it's data. It's just signals, right? Sure. You are the choices you make, you know, you are the driver. Right. So, you know, I think about that often. I don't have crazy, you know, I don't think I have super crazy voices, but, strange instincts sometimes, fearful instincts sometimes. And that's what I got to work on. So when it came around to, you know, I think it was around last April, you know, I finally had, you know, a series of really big breakdowns, you know, like really, like I feel like the thing that really put it over the top, and this can't be right, but this is how I remember it. It was almost like like 4 or 5 days of consistent panic.
Oh, there's nothing worse.
Not just anxiety. I mean, like my nervous system was shot, you know, shaking and the sweats. I want to say it was something like 4 or 5 days, and my wife was just like, "Dude, you know."
Yeah.
You know, this is not normal. You're not just going to tough this out. You're not just going to walk this off. Mm-hmm. You've got to go get help. And, you know, and that's the point when, you know, doctor's like, yeah, dude, you know, this is what's going on with you and this is how you deal with it. And that forced me to, you know, rethink a lot about my life. And one of the bigger ones was, you know, work was Blizzard after all these years and all these, you know, all these projects I had in the pipe. It was excruciating. So here's the flip. Here's the weirder one.
Mm.
Looking back now, I think it's true that a lot of what happened to me, you know, this physical breakdown or mental, if you will, nervous breakdown, whatever.
Sure.
A lot of it was the stress I was carrying. And how I'm wired, you know, I carry a lot of stress because I burn a lot of calories, in my workday, you know, so it's kind of in a weird way, I'm constantly refueling myself on the fly with interacting with people and new ideas. Okay. You know, so it's a two-edged sword.
Mm.
Certainly a lot of the breakdown was caused by the stress that was building. But I think the greater part of it was, I think, way deep down in my soul, I knew I wanted to be done, but I didn't know how to accept it.
Mm.
And so the panic, that this turn in my body, was my body telling me, knock it off.
Yeah.
You've got to stop. It's almost like I would never have let go of Blizzard or that identity or what I thought was my obligation to all those people. I would never in my own power have been able to let it go. I had to be struck by lightning. Mm. I literally had to be struck by lightning so hard that my hands would just reflexively open.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. You know, maybe this turn in my life, in my body, was perhaps it was the miracle I needed. You know, perhaps it was a blessing. Mm. Although I have to deal with it now, and make a few changes in life and adjust my expectations on myself and what I engage in. It was the only way for me to break the pattern that I had become trapped in. That cycle of performance, expectation, validation, performance.
Looking back on it, can you see it in its increments? Can you see it as like, if you look at the first 5 years, awesome, rock and roll, let's go. Next 5 years, you could feel there was a little bit of stacking on there. After a while, stacked a little more. Like, is it possible to see that in retrospect, or did it just kind of seem like it came all at once?
With like perfect hindsight. Mm. And also the changes in life, you know, in those phases apart from the career, getting married, having children, divorce, single dad, getting married again, it's like I can see, this total arc of myself and my own self expectations in each of those phases, and how that adjusted me, and how I, the plates you spin, you keep all these plates spinning in the air all at once. And these things, my self expectations, were very high, I just was desperate to do a good job. I think in all of these vectors, it wasn't just career, I was trying to be super dad and a model husband and a good son and all these things, which in and of themselves are wonderful. Mm-hmm. But my trap was I couldn't feel safe in my own skin and just love myself unless I felt that I was doing well for all the people around me. Mm-hmm. And that's a terrifying trap, right? Because at the end of the day, we're just human and we're just people. And sure, you do the best you can and we screw up. And
well, plus I just feel like I feel like there's an exponential problem happening here where you That's true for many, many people, but you had one grow from a small ragtag group of gamers and developers into a many thousands, multi-country, international company of people who are now having that same sort of, you're having the same sense, they're counting on you, and you've got family, and you've got those commitments, and I can see how that would feel like a snowball. Like it just, that's too much at some point
it became unsustainable and my body let me know. Mm-hmm. And so the past, 6 months or so since April, certainly the last number of months that I've been out of work, I've had that time to just take an audit of my life and my heart and what is really, really important to me. I actually had a moment, this is a number of months ago, right before I made the decision to retire. Mm-hmm. And it was tearing me apart. I just didn't know how to pull the trigger. I was so afraid on both, one, of stroking out if I kept working, and two, who would I possibly be if I lay down this identity, if I lay down these responsibilities? I was petrified that my glass house of performance and making everybody feel real good would just collapse. And I guess the terror of these were not actual thoughts in my head, but this is what was going on. Mm-hmm. It was just the existential terror of what is on the other side? Who am I on the other side?
Right.
And can I love myself? Is there a cool dude there to love, Mm-hmm. And I was sitting in my backyard, wigging out because I couldn't be in the house. I couldn't sit on the couch. I couldn't have the TV on, couldn't be around the kid. I was just out of my skin.
Yeah.
And, I was talking to a good friend of mine, a mentor of mine. And he finally said, he's like, I know you, dude, you're going to try and pound back in there Monday morning, and do right by everybody. And you're going to stroke out. God. And he said, you don't owe anybody your health, but your family, you don't owe anybody anything. Blizzard's a bunch of the greatest, smartest, professional craftsmen ever. They're all big kids. They will be fine. You're not failing anybody.
Right.
You're just at the end of your rope here. You're not failing them. Mm-hmm. And it just hit me like a ton of bricks. He's like, cause nothing's worth your health. Your family needs you in truth, your kids, your wife,
Sure.
And it's almost like I needed, this is going to sound crazy, well, it always crazy. It's fine. it's almost like I needed an adult man to give me permission to let go.
I totally get this. Yeah.
Set down my broadsword, you know, and just, you know, someone, you know, to, you know, pat me on the shoulder and say, you done good, kid. It's okay to rest. It just, it never rest. It never occurred to me, you know? Yeah. And then I had a subsequent discussion with my daughter, you know, who was 13, and I had been, you know, dealing with anxiety and wigging out for, I don't know, a couple months at that point. And I was trying to soldier up and keep it, you know, hide it from them. And my daughter, you know, we have people close in our family that have had, you know, have anxiety. And I sat down with her. I'm like, honey, you know, you probably got a sense now, you know, that, you know, dad's wigging out a little bit. I think it has to do with work and things. I'm working some stuff out. She's like, Dad, come on, man. You know, so you have anxiety, you know, I see it every day. And she's like, when do you get to rest? So it was almost the same words. You know, when do you get to, she said, when do you get to win?
Oh, wow.
And by that, it doesn't mean, you know, win over other people at all. She just meant like, when do you get to step back and just enjoy what you've done and make your life for you, you know?
It's pretty wise.
And it was like out of the mouths of babes, right?
Yeah, wise words.
And it was between those two conversations and a lot of prayer and a lot of time just thinking through things and oh, man, just constant prayer. I finally kind of got that just peace in my body of just like, it's okay to let go. Blizzard's going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. And in the intervening months, you know, after that letter went out in September, it's like just so impossibly confirmed. You know, I'm probably as peaceful and thoughtful and serene as I have ever been in my life, ever been in my life. Just nothing to prove, nothing to do. Nothing to be in service of except, you know, for my immediate family. And, you know, just being home and taking them to school and picking them up and making peanut butter sandwiches and working with homework and just being home with the baby all day, every day, you know, just, you know, feedings and naps and just laughing with her, you know, it's just been such a joyful, it's hard to collate it all. You know, just being home with Kat, you know, who's so in love, you know, with the baby, just so she's also, I think, in just the most peaceful, serene phase of her life and just enjoying each other and enjoying this time. I didn't know how desperately I wanted it and longed for it because I've never seen it before. I've never seen anyone have it before, really. And I'm so, you know, it's a miracle that I get to do this, you know, if you know, at least, you know, for a number of years, you know, just not have to go into an office. And I'm so aware of that, you know, how blessed we are to be able to have this time with each other.
So I know it's only been a few months, but do you miss it? Do you ever think, oh man, here's a day where as much as I am loving this, boy, I sure wish I was working on this. I mean, does that ever happen?
I get asked that a lot. The only thing I miss, I miss my friends, you know, I miss, if I can make a distinction between, how would I put it? There's the action in your day as a creative leader. Mm-hmm. What is the action? The action is interacting with people you love to jam with on fun ideas that turn you on. Mm-hmm. And then there's the, you know, then there's the part of it of having to build it, account for it, account for all these people, you know, the politics and, you know, the maneuverings that it takes to get things built, being the boss, the pressure of having people's, you know, lives and careers in your hands. And, if those two things are very different, I miss parts of the action. I miss talking with my friends over geeky ideas. The part of that that's building games and telling stories and building things of particular shape, I really don't miss that. You know, oh man, I wish I was building a world right now. Or, oh man, I need to get started on the great American novel. Right. I don't feel any of it. I'm so happy to do nothing. You know, I got my hobbies and things and I stay creative in a way. But the impulse to want to create something for consumption, or express myself through ideas that someone else would see. I think that's a space where my tanks had run very empty. And, you know, it's only life and experience that fill your tanks up again.
Right. Right.
It's not actually watching Star Wars again or reading, you know, X-Men 200 again that fills your tanks back up creatively. Those are fun endeavors.
Right.
Clearly. But it's, I think it's normal life that fills an artist's tanks up again. It's relationships. It's, honey, will you go, you know, to the market and grab milk and the funny thing you see on the way going over there. It's not necessarily creative, geeky idea stuff that fills your fuel tanks back up. It's just living. And so that's what I'm doing, you know? And, like I said in that letter, you know, I don't think I've ever been happier, and I don't think life has ever been simpler. And I don't think I'm confident. I have never been as much as, you know, I have to worry about this anxiety from time to time. In a way, I've never felt more secure in my own skin.
Yeah.
Comfortable in my own skin.
It's going to be tough for some people to see which thing they're more jealous is the wrong word, but I'll use it more jealous of here. Either the massive cultural impact and footprint you left at Blizzard, even up to the final minute, and with the success they're having this year, all that stuff has your name on it. That's something to be jealous of, or if they're going to be more jealous of this awesome, serene moment you're having now. And I think if I'm to pick, I think I really like the sound of where you're at now.
I mean, all I can tell you is from today, what do I know? But what I do know and what I've had to really put my hands around is that in life, you know, I guess everyone has that, you know, everyone has their own thing. But for me, for my story, family is everything. Mm-hmm. You know, family, if you're going to put your security in something, you know, it's how loved are you, you know?
It's the only real investment that pays
off.
And how much
love do you give out? You know, sure. It's a loop, you know?
Sure.
And that's what I want to be about. You know, I may have work in the years to come. I struggle imagining that I'll ever join a corporation again.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any part of me that would want to be a corporate officer again. I do think that I'll want to tell stories again, though in a far more, you know, maybe, you know, quiet or limited capacity. You know, everyone says, dude, you're going to get restless. You're going to want to get back in the action. Like, you know what? I don't know. But I will want to relate and engage. I will want the art to come back. But I think I have a lot of journeying to do to kind of reconnect with why I wanted to be an artist in the first place. What compelled me as a kid to sit in my room all the time, all of my waking hours, drawing and writing and drawing again. And I had never had any expectation that anyone would ever see any of it. And really no one other than, you know, Sammy's, you know, was it the Sons of the Storm website where I have a bunch of my old, you know, personal drawings up there. No one would ever have seen any of it. And I had no expectation that they would. I did it because it was my joy. You know, I was, you know, crafting things for myself, you know, and just to exercise my mind, you know. And
when I saw your art on the wall at the charity auction at BlizzCon this year, I sent you a photo even of it because it was cracking me up. And I thought to myself, so there's this shot, there's this old drawing you did of Jim Raynor on his vulture, kind of standing there looking like a badass. And they had it there for auction. And then they also had next to it a more moderned up, I think probably 2010
Wei
era.
Wei Wang's painting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Amazing. Freaking, geez Louises.
Yeah,
so
cool. Who wants their 1993 drawing right next to Wei Wang's painting?
That was great. But here's what I thought. I saw that and I went, there's something there. I saw some of your Diablo stuff as well. And I just thought, I wonder if he's drawing again. Are you drawing again? Is that a place you can escape?
Not yet. But I think that would be really fun. It's like, I have to rewire myself to once I started doing all this stuff for work, and this is maybe, you know, 15 years ago, it became less, meditative and kind of cathartic for me, which I think was the draw in the first place of just being creative. And it became a little more about work And suddenly I'm surrounded by all these guys that draw and paint, you know, infinitely better than I ever could. Mm-hmm. And so I think the calculus changed a little bit. I didn't enjoy it quite as much. And I found other ways to communicate the ideas I wanted to communicate. You know, drawing really was just the crudest way I could find of communicating a cool geeky idea. As my voice grew, you know, I was able to translate that into, you know, writing. I don't know that I was a much better writer than I was an artist. And then what really happened in the second half of my career at Blizzard was, beyond just drawing and writing, mm-hmm. or even designing to a limited capacity, it was kind of being the, you know, the creative director thing, which is a little more like a conductor.
Mm-hmm. You were the Lore Walker Cho of the company at the time.
Yeah, dude, in a way, you know, it was this totally different kind of craftsmanship where, and again, this schizophrenics thing of I'm not turning anything out literally from my hands. I am neither directly drawing or writing the lion's share of things right. anymore, but I'm deeply working with all the special teams that do and conjuring something. You know, I don't know. You know, much greater out of the parts.
Sure. You went from soldier to general, basically.
I guess, you know, and I found that I really enjoyed that most because suddenly these ideas aren't just in my head, and I'm trying to express them through, you know, either onto a Word document or a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, these ideas are living immediately in the minds of all these people and being shaped. You know, the craftsmanship part of art is such a personal process. Sure. You know, crafting an image or a poem, you know, or a song, and it's you and your instrument or whatever you're doing, and it's such a singular outpouring. Where what I often refer to game dev, the best analogy I can think of is, you know, it's a band. With multiple instruments and minds and hearts and instincts. And the music is something you really, that is just beyond any single point of contribution. And I really fell in love with that as my primary point of craftsmanship. I really enjoyed building big ideas with all these people in the mix and contributing to it. And, oh, I love that idea. Let's put that in here. And, you know, almost like I don't have an analogy for it now, but I wound up enjoying the process of creating corporately. And by corporately, I don't mean...
You mean cooperatively.
Cooperatively.
Sure.
Is what I mean. I think I got so much more out of that than any particular expression that could have come out of my head or my hands.
No, it was nothing like an amazing collaboration. It's just, it's an incredible thing. Speaking of which, I mean, I know a lot of people out there listening to us right now hope that your comic foray into the Transformers comics briefly, a collaboration with the artist that we all really enjoyed. They all hope that's not the last one. And I keep telling people, if I were Chris, I wouldn't, you know, I'd just be enjoying, you know, not having to be committed to anything. But like you said, you know, the future may hold, who knows what.
Yeah.
And it'll be on your terms and, you know, kind of what you have the immediate passion for. And that's, you know, that's exciting just to know that that's a possibility, even if it never transpires. Even if you decide, meh, I'm good, there's still something about, you know, knowing you could fire if you need to.
Yeah, I could definitely see, you know, little projects like that. I really enjoyed working on Transformers, and it was just so you know, I didn't have any expectations that people had to love it, or there's, you know, millions of people waiting for this thing to be great. Like it was just such a personal, fun love letter to Transformers. It was fun to build. It was fun to work with Livio and Flint. Yeah, maybe I have a few of those, and you know, over the next couple of years, you know, maybe. One of the funnest things was because I've got, you know, stories from when I was a kid that I've you know, picked at over the years. I have giant notebooks full of worlds and ideas, you know, that I've had since I was young, mm-hmm. and you know, but I'm not, you know, I don't hold myself as a writer in super high esteem. I'm cool for video games, but you know, as a novelist or whatever. And I remember the day I released that letter, Christy Golden had posted on Facebook and just going, "Oh, you know, I can't believe, you know, can't believe you're going out, Chris, but if you ever get bored," and I went, "Oh yeah." You know, so, you know, maybe, you know, it's not this year, maybe not next year, but hopefully, you know, one day, I can talk Christy into having some adventures. I got worlds. I got worlds in my pocket.
She looks at you. I know she, I've just from you know, talking to her before, she has huge, huge respect for the origin of a lot of the stuff that she now gets to write about. And I bet that's a thing that could absolutely happen if you both found yourselves with the opportunity.
Maybe, you know, I love collaborating with Christy. She's just awesome. She is the real deal. I think our instincts on things are very simpatico.
Yeah.
So, maybe there's projects in the future. We'll see. But kind of like I said, it's like, I know that I need to, it's like this creative performance thing. Like I was saying about the role at Blizzard, it kind of become this trap. And I know that I need to just heal and chill and not try to leap back into the creative arena before I trust myself to do so.
Yeah.
Why am I doing this? If the answer is only because it brings me joy, then it's time to do it.
Right.
If it's for any other reason, like I want to keep my swords sharp, or I want to, I don't want to be forgotten, or I want to prove that I still have some chops, or prove that I have any kind of chops outside of the geniuses at Blizzard, if it's for any of those reasons, it would be a mistake to do it. Mm. So I think that's just part of this phase I'm in. It's just this healing phase, chill out in the back of the tank and take her easy, and, don't try and fire, any unnecessary missiles.
So
I'm kind of curious about myself too. Everyone says, oh dude, you're going to get restless and you can't leave the action that long. It's scary how surprised I am at how, in a way, after all the fireworks had gone off and after all the fear, it was actually terrifyingly simple to lay it all down. As I sit, with this baby, every day next to my wife, and it's suddenly it all gets very real and very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And just that's where my happy is.
Comes into focus, man. And you're
comes with focus.
Yeah. And you're in a place where I don't know. It's a place, like you said earlier, you feel lucky to be there. I think you are lucky to be there. I think it was
that's a gift.
But you never did. The thing I will say, and I'm not just trying to butter you up, and we're friends, and I could shower you with compliments, but now that we're friends, I'm just going to say something that I think is true, regardless of whether it's a compliment or not. But it's sure there was some luck. Yeah, you were a young 19-year-old. Yeah, it happened to be Blizzard. Yeah, all the way down to Cat and the baby and everything else. But you never squandered that stuff. And I think this is just this is another stage where you're not squandering it. You maybe had to, your body and ecosystem maybe had to push you this direction.
Mm-hmm.
But once it did, you said, "Oh, all right. Well, I'm not going to take this for granted either."
Right.
And there's something I
appreciate that, dude. I'm wired in a weird way that like I will agonize over the right thing. What is the right thing? Mm-hmm. In this moment, everyone that it affects and then me, and is it also what I want? That's a secondary thing, but I will agonize over making big decisions and look at it from every angle that I can. Mm-hmm. But once I resolve to do the thing, I'm a Sherman tank. I absolutely just embrace it and go with all of my, power and passion and focus, and rarely have regrets that way. I have regrets in my life, and most often I wish I could have been better to people in certain instances.
Mm-hmm.
Wish I had been more loving. I wish I had more wherewithal in moments where I've been hurt to have been more loving and more forgiving. But I don't really have any regrets about big decisions.
Mm.
Because I think,
because you agonized over
a lot of them so much in advance, and I get a lot. I look to the few mentors I've had in my life. I look to people that I trust, and to get is this look reasonable? Is this look responsible? Mm-hmm. And I've been fortunate to be surrounded by people that have kept me on the rails all these years and love me and are wise.
Sure.
It's good to get. It's good to get advice. It's good to check in with people you trust. We
sure.
weren't meant to move mighty mountains on our own.
That is true. I feel like as we kind of round this down, I feel like your attention to big ideas, the broader picture, the bigger perspective, the larger vision of the valley, and not getting too hung up on the pebble in front of me sort of attitude is probably what brought us and this interview together. In a lot of ways, I think we share that outlook. People listening right now will know that I tend to lean into big ideas, philosophical out there's. I'm less interested in the immediate nitty-gritty and more about, well, what does this mean for the industry?
Right.
What does this mean for people? Why do we like to blow each other up in a video game, but we would never do that in real life? Like, those kinds of things are interesting to me.
Totally.
I feel like you think in similar ways, and it's something I'm real grateful for. So thank you for that. It means
a lot. If I lived in your neighborhood, I think we would have blown the neighborhood up already. I think with some just crazy barbecues every other day.
Oh yeah.
I think that your state would not contain the shenanigans that we would get into if we lived close by.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's a bro fest.
We'd have the D&D would be off the hook. We'd have I'd be painting Warhammer figures, for heaven's sakes. Like, it would never stop. And we're all, we're both in a place right now where family's everything, and we got to just do what we do to get by to make that the best thing we do. And I don't know, it's been a nice ride for me. A lot of people are like, oh, you sad that Chris isn't at Blizzard anymore, and you're not going to have that, that opportunity to talk about the hot new thing or those occasional interviews or whatever. And I said, oh, I don't know that that's the impetus for this. And so I'm really glad you took the time to do this, man. It's important. And our fans, some may have tuned into this going, oh, cool, we get to find out why Thrall is green and
who's after Sombra?
You're right. Who's after Sombra? What, tell us more about that ARG and who's the next character to come out. And we're not
right.
I never intended for that to be this today. In fact, a lot of this is just, hey, let's see what happens. And I think
just
this, and the stuff you talked about, like I say, I think that's going to matter to a lot of people who hear this and are trying to kind of find their way in lots of ways, maybe in different forks in their own lives and trying to decide to go left or right. And I think this stuff is good for people. And at the end of the day, if we're not doing some good, then what are we doing? So I really appreciate you doing that.
Well, thanks for letting me ramble, all this time. If, it's, if I've learned anything, it's the more often we're able to kind of be vulnerable with each other and just talk about what's going on in our lives and not just try and hone the perfectly sculpted, social media image of ourselves. That's where we learn. And that's where the engagement comes. And that's, I don't know, ultimately what really connects us to each other, as people. And I look back and realize that I wasn't doing that enough. I was trying to shoulder things too much on my own. And, in this phase of my life, I'm much more, aware that, I need people and I need to be honest with people. Mm. And in turn, they're honest with me. And it's a truer, more real look at life.
Yeah, it's pretty refreshing. Well, all the best in everything you've got going. The family, of course. I know there's a lot of love from our community in your direction. I hope you can feel that. And
I love them too. Yeah. It means a lot.
Yeah. And I really appreciate you doing this with me, man. This is it's been a real pleasure for me. And we'll hook up again down the road, everybody.
I wanted to say, we wound up getting fairly, deep today, which is killer, dude,
Sure.
But if you ever want to do another one of these and we just geek out for an hour and a half, I'm totally hip. I happen to have a lot of time in my hands. So.
All right. Well, I've got, there's a little movie coming out this year called Star Wars Rogue One. Uh-huh. We may want to bonk heads after and see what we thought, something like that.
Yes, sir.
So we'll definitely keep in touch. But again, Chris Metzen, everybody, thanks so much for your time. And let's do this again.
All good. Thanks, everybody.
All my life I have lived by the sword. I've seen kingdoms burn and watched brave heroes die in vain. It's been difficult for me to trust after losing so much. But from you, I have learned patience, tolerance, and faith.
take care of each other.
Have a great BlizzCon!
Guys, thanks for taking part in this interview. Really, really appreciate it. If you like the kinds of shows you hear on the Frog Pants Network, and you'd like to hear more, consider supporting it at patreon.com/frogpants. That's patreon.com/frogpants. Go to frogpants.com for more. See you next time.